ओम ज्ञानति निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the trees, creepers, herbs, and seasonal plants and flowers blossom and fructify, each in its own season. Purport. As the sun rises and sets, and the seasonal changes ensue at their appointed times by the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so the seasonal plants, flowers, herbs, and trees all grow under the direction of the Supreme Lord. It is not that the plants grow automatically without any cause, as the atheistic philosophers say. Rather, they grow in pursuance of the supreme order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is confirmed in the Vedic literature that the Lord's diverse energies are working so nicely that it appears that everything is being done automatically. Everything is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Again, here, the theme of fear is emphasized. Do you understand English? Tamil translation is there. The theme of fear. What is fear? It's a very strong feeling. Of course, there are levels of it. In English, there are different words. Fear, apprehension, terror. Terror means intense fear. Fear is a general term. Apprehension means a feeling that something might go wrong, or feeling that there's something wrong. So there are different levels, but fear is a strong feeling, as I was saying yesterday, that it's in this material world is called the world of fear. Everyone has in the back of their mind the fear of death. But fear motivates most of our actions. Fear of not being accepted. Fear of being rejected by others. So what is fear? Fear means that it's an expectation of harm to ourselves. It's not that there's anything. Fear means fear of future harm. It may be immediate, just like if you're driving and all of a sudden you see a truck coming full speed right at your little motorbike. Then you immediately feel fear. There's no harm until it actually hits you. But the fear that it is going to hit you, which seems quite possible. So the fear may be longer term, that manifests as worry. One is worried, what will happen to my children in future? What will happen to me in future? My security. So, worry, anxiety, these are all different aspects of fear that something harmful will happen to me. Now, what's being discussed here is fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can one fear that person who is always thinking of our benefit? How can we fear him? He always acts in a manner that is beneficial for us. There's no better friend than us. Ami bina bandhu ara ke ache toma, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is paraphrased by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying, who but I is a better friend to you? So how can one fear the Supreme Lord? One can only fear Him if one doesn't have a proper understanding of Him, or if one has a separate interest to Him. If one defines one's self-interest as something different to how the Supreme Lord understands it, then we can think of being harmed even by Him. People are afraid that, well, I don't want to go to the temple, I don't want my son to go to the temple because he might become too religious. They're afraid. Why should they be afraid of him following the orders of God? Because they think that his doing so is against my self-interest. My self-interest is to have money, and if my son becomes a sadhu and follows the order of God, then my income will be affected. He won't be earning for me. He won't be bringing me money. So one fears the Supreme Lord when one identifies with the body and one's own self-interest to be the bodily sense gratification in its gross and subtle phases. And one understands that for the Supreme Lord, one relates to Him in His phase as the destroyer, Narantaka, the destroyer of all men. That's one name for the Supreme Lord. So only when one has a separate interest to Him can one fear Him. Otherwise, why should there be fear if we know that He is our best friend? Now, another phase of fear, it's not exactly fear, but it's similar, is if one accepts the Supreme Lord as one's greatest friend, but Tamil translation. But has a great sense of reverence for Him. Well, that's very good, isn't it, to greatly revere the Supreme Lord. We should do. He's much greater than us. Not even out of fear. But just considering, not thinking that He's going to harm me, not having a separate interest, but out of understanding His great position, that awe and reverence. What was discussed in the previous verse was the demigods. What is discussed here is figuratively that the trees, creepers, herbs, and different plants, they blossom and they fructify according to the proper time and the proper season. This is figurative because the plants, they don't think of the Supreme Lord. They don't have the consciousness to think of the Supreme Lord. But it means maya dhyakshena prakritihi suyate sacharachara hetunanena konte jagadviparivartate. The cosmos is going on under the direction of the Supreme Lord. So there, again, actually this, we can say that this verse is referring to the demigods who oversee all these different functions. Every function within the universe is overseen by a demigod. The blinking of the eyes is an eye blinker overseeing demigod. Everything. So all these different functions of material nature are overseen by different demigods. They're devotees, but they are sakam bhaktas. They have a separate interest from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, they experience fear of Him. Not the fear that Kamsa experiences when thinking of Krishna, because his interest is absolutely different from Krishna, from that of Krishna. So it's not the same fear, but it's a great sense of awe and reverence, plus they don't intend to go against his order. They're not thinking of doing so. But at the same time, they're interested in their own sense gratification, and they know that that may clash with the desire of the Supreme Lord. So they're afraid. They're living a dual existence. They're both servants of the Supreme Lord, and at the same time trying to enjoy sense gratification, which two things might seem to go very well in demigod life, but ultimately it's not a perfectly harmonious mix, because they are fearful. This fear manifests as fear of performing sinful activity, because they have to suffer for doing so. And we also, when we hear the different stories from Mahabharata and the Puranas and Ramayana, that instills some fear in us. We hear that Nahush took the position of Indra. Then he wanted to enjoy the wife of Indra. So he had to fall down. For breaking dharma, the laws of dharma, what is to be done and what is not to be done. So the Supreme Lord is appreciated by persons who are interested in sense gratification as the maintainer of worldly dharma. This should be done, that should not be done. If you don't do what's proper, then you don't get the reward that comes from doing so. And if you do that which is improper, then you are punished for doing so. So this is the level that the demigods are on. Of course, that's a generalization. They may also have some affection for the Supreme Lord, but it's not very much developed. Those who have more developed affection, like we were saying, like the residents of Dwaraka, they have affection for Krishna, but still great awe and reverence. So some fear is there, some hesitation. They're not like the residents of Vrindavan, who will just act in a very free and natural way with Krishna. They're very respectful. Very respectful towards him. So from the perspective of the Vrajvasis, even the bhakti of Dwaraka, which is glorious, which is pure, from the perspective of the residents of Vrindavan, that is called Vitta Bhakti, or crippled, because the concept of fear by which one is very careful, if one is afraid of someone, you're very careful what you say. If you're in there, you may be afraid to come even into their presence. And if you come into their presence, you might be very careful that how you stand and what you say and everything, because you're afraid of them. You're afraid if you act wrongly or say something wrongly, then you may get into trouble. This Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told the story of the sycophant. You know what sycophant means? It means a flatterer, someone who flatters with the aim of just pleasing some superior person. He becomes just, his whole aim is to please him in a cheap way, so that he can get some benefit from him, or at least not be harmed by him. So one zamindar, a rich landlord, asked one of his servants, "What do you think is the best vegetable?" And he said, "Well, what do you?" And the servant replied, "Well, what do you think is the best vegetable?" "No, I'm asking you." "Well, I don't really have any opinion of my own, so I just think what you think." "So, what do you think?" And the landlord said, "Well, I think eggplant, bagel, that's the best." And then the servant said, "Yes, it's wonderful, you can cook it. It's very easy to cut and cook, and it's abundant, and it absorbs so much mustard oil, it tastes very nice. But then the landlord said that, well, actually it's not so good. I mean, it has no nutritious value. And if you eat too much, you tend to get boils. And then the servant said, yes, you're right. It's terrible. There's nothing good about begun at all. It's the worst vegetable. Then the landlord said that potato is very good. And then he prayed, oh yes, potato is. And then the servant said, yes, potato is so wonderful. You can cook it in so many different ways, and you can even make sweets out of it, and you can dry it. And the landlord said, yeah, but, you know, after all, potato is a very ordinary, humble vegetable and makes you put on so much weight. And then the son said, yeah, it's completely useless potato. Who would be interested in eating potatoes? So like this story, this anecdote, or not really anecdote, parable, it gives the mentality of a sycophant, or one who doesn't have any individuality, or doesn't even want to have. He subverts his personality to not even to pleasing, not really to pleasing the person he's supposed to be praising, but in a very shallow way. Because the sycophant is a very shallow person. And he doesn't have any depth of personality, so he doesn't try to understand the depth of the personality of the person he's praising, but just in a very, like that, a cheap way, he tries to please him, because he thinks that if this person's pleased, then he will behave with me in a way that's good for my own self-interest. He may be afraid if I contradict him, then he'll throw me out of the job, or have me imprisoned, or have me beaten. And if I please him, then he'll give me all the things that I need, power, position, money. So sycophants, they hang around fools. One who is somehow or other in a position, he's somehow or other in a position, but not very intelligent. He likes to have sycophants. But a really intelligent person, a really intelligent king, will surround himself by pious, honest, intelligent, independently minded brahmanas who will advise him what is for his ultimate good, even if it's not what the king might think that he wants to do. The brahmanas will advise him to do like that, even if it's not pleasing to him, because they're not sycophants. They're not afraid of him. By maintaining their independence, then they have nothing to lose. If the king rejects them, I don't like your advice. All right, I'll find someone else who's intelligent enough to accept it. We find that Chanakya, Prabhupada used to call him Chanakya. He's more commonly known in India as Kautilya, which means crooked, person of crooked mentality. But Prabhupada didn't have the outlook on him, so he got rid of the king. He conspired to get rid of Nanda, who was the king, because he was a rascal. He had no respect for Brahminical culture. Then he, having got him killed, he brought in Chandragupta. So it may seem that he was politically conniving, but he lived very humbly and simply. So he did that for the benefit of the people. for the benefit of the state, knowing that they need a good king, but he himself remained neutral. That the king may, I'm not indebted to him, just like Bhishma, the Drona, they became indebted to Duryodhana by accepting favors from him. So, Brahmin is independent. The best kind of Brahmin is, he will, he not even accept charity from anyone, because by doing so one becomes obliged. He'll go to the harvesting field and pick up grains which haven't been collected. I mean, that's just one or two, you know, picking up one at a time. Or he may, it's called Shilonchana Vritti. Another one is Ayachit Vritti. He doesn't even make any endeavor, not even that. He doesn't even go to pick up grains from the field which are left over after harvesting. But just if by the grace of God, Ayachit Vritti is when you don't ask for anything, and Ajagara Vritti is when it's similar, when whatever happens to come to one, he accepts. So this way, he doesn't go, Kasmad Pajanti Kavayo Dhanadur Madandhan. Why should a learned person go to flatter persons who are blinded by wealth? He doesn't become their servant. He's very careful not to be. His high principles are more important to him than money. So he doesn't become, he doesn't accept money and then become obliged to anyone. The feeling that now I'm obliged. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was speaking once and Abhay Chararavinda Das, his disciple, was one of the persons sitting there. And an elderly man was sitting next to Abhay Chararavinda Prabhu. And he asked him something, exactly what we don't know. So Abhay was caught in a quandary. You see, his guru is speaking, he shouldn't interrupt. On the other hand, there's an elderly man, and you can't refuse him either. So seeing this elderly man speaking with Abhay, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur chastised that, oh, such and such Babu, do you think you have purchased me with your 50 rupees a month contribution, or whatever it was? 50 rupees in those days was a lot of money. You think you have purchased me? Now you can do whatever you like? Because you're giving money, therefore I should just let you do whatever you like. And to Abhay Babu, you said that maybe you should come up here and speak instead of me. So, Brahmin maintains independence. Even if one takes, if one accepts funds, one shouldn't become indebted. One shouldn't become indebted on the mundane platform. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave so much praise to Jagabandhu Datta, his disciple, who spent most of his life's earnings to build that big temple in Bagh Bazar on the bank of the Ganga. Gave so much praise, not just for giving the money, but the attitude with which he gave it. One of selfless devotion. He appreciated that. Not everyone has that, even though he was a householder. Married man, two wives, which was quite common in those days. But even some of his own men, he wasn't so satisfied with them, even though apparently they're doing so much service, but he would say, that, oh, they're doing it for all their own name and fame. He wasn't so satisfied. He also said that we're accepting funds for the sake of spreading the mission. We're accepting funds from so many materialistic people. And with that comes poison, which might not be able to digest. Poison means, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Bishoyer onna kaile dushto malin hoima. If we accept grains offered by a materialist, then the mind becomes polluted. Accepting grains means not only food cooked by them, that's more polluting. But even just the raw grain given, the Brahmin should accept charity from very pious people. Even if he accepts raw, uncut grain from impious people, then he has to take sinful reaction. So, the subject matter was fear, how the Vrajavasis, or the Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, Vitta Bhakti, that devotion which is crippled by a sense of awe and reverence, one who is in a natural relationship with Krishna, no fear, then even he can scold Krishna, climb on his back. There's no fear in the spiritual world, in the topmost. We can say in Dwarka, Vaikuntha, there's a sense of awe and reverence, not exactly fear. And in Vrindavan, there is no fear. Then we may say, well, how is there fear in this material world? Because everything here is a perverted reflection of what goes on there. So where's the fear? How does that come? Well, there is fear, even in Vrindavan, but it's not fear that I will be harmed. Some ghost will come and attack me. Fear of ghosts, or fear of thieves, or fear of snakes. Not that kind of fear, but there's the fear that Krishna will go away, and then I won't see Krishna. Then I won't be able to serve Krishna. Or the fear, Kapoor. Is that famous verse? The gopis are very afraid that Krishna, he's walking barefoot and his feet will be hurt by the little stones. So their fear is that Krishna will be hurt, or Krishna will be dissatisfied, or that we're not able to serve Krishna. So that is their fear. They don't calculate fear in terms of how we shall, our own bodies shall become harmed. It's the same thing. It's fear of harm, but our self-interest will be affected. But the self-interest is calculated in, they don't see themselves, they cannot conceive of themselves in any other way but as servants of Krishna. So their fear is that their service to Krishna will be impeded. When Uddhava came to Vrindavan, he came in a chariot. When the gopis saw the chariot, they thought, oh, maybe Akrura has come back. Because Akrura was the worst thing, it's the worst thing they could think of, is Akrura, because he took Krishna away. So they thought, oh, maybe Akrura has come back. So what's he come back for? You know, he already took Krishna away. What more harm is he going to do to us? Maybe he wants to chop up our bodies and offer us them the flesh into the fire. They were thinking, they were just trying to think of something which could be, and they said, well, actually, he can't do any more harm. He already took, there's nothing to be afraid of. He already took Krishna away, and even if he does want to chop our bodies up, then what does it matter to us? How more can he harm us? What does he come for again? How does he think he can harm us any more than he already has done? That's what they were thinking. So they were thinking that there's nothing anyone can do to us now to harm us in any way, because we can't see any way there's any benefit for us unless Krishna comes back. So you can't harm us anymore. Even if you kill our bodies, you can't. That's of no consequence. So they thought, well, even if Akura comes, we've got nothing to fear from him. Can't harm us. It's already the worst harm he's inflicted upon us. Akura, he's accepted as a great devotee. When he was coming to Vrindavan, he was ecstatically thinking, how I will see Krishna. But the gopis don't like him at all. The residents of Vrindavan don't like him. So how's that for a contradiction? He's a great devotee, but some other devotees who are greater than him, they don't like him. So fear, it's like all mundane emotions, is a fear in this material world is a perverted reflection of the emotions in the spiritual world. Often people ask about envy. What about envy? How can there be envy in the spiritual world? Well, envy means jealousy or bad feeling towards others, without any, just out of bad nature. So that isn't there in the spiritual world, but there is bad feeling towards others, which nourishes one's love of Krishna. Although it sounds maybe difficult to understand, but just like Akrura, the gopis are feeling that the word Akrura to them is worse than that of Kamsa. So they have bad feelings, but it all nourishes their ecstasy of love for Krishna. Or we find that among the gopis there are different groups. Yes. Raghunath Das Goswami, the very name Sakhistali, the village of Chandravali, he didn't even like to hear the name, because she's against Radharani, theoretically. And from Raghunath Das Goswami's point of view, not theoretically, actually. So he has very bad feeling towards Chandravali, who is one of the great devotees. So there's apparent envy, but it all nourishes love for Krishna. That love for Krishna without some opposing factor, that would be rather insipid. The Christian idealization of heaven is God sits on a cloud and angels, they sing different songs. It's all rather boring. Some people, they thought, well, I'd rather go to hell. It sounds more interesting. At least, you know, we can smoke and we can drink and we can fight. It sounds like more fun. In heaven, you're just sitting singing hymns all day and night forever. It's really boring. You know, hell might be bad, but at least you can have some fun down there. But Vrindavan is the place of the greatest fun. There's all kinds of, there's opposing elements. Kutila, Jatila, they're always trying to stop Radharani going to Krishna. So they're like the bad elements. But without them, it wouldn't be so much fun. So they're apparently envious of Krishna. They don't like Krishna. But if they weren't there, then Krishna's lila wouldn't be as wonderful as it is. It would be kind of boring. So fear, even there's fear of demons, even in the spiritual world, there's no demons, there's just talk of them. They might become. So that apparent, the fear, Keshi is coming, Arishta is coming. That there's an apparent sense of fear, of bodily fear, but they know that Krishna will protect, and then Krishna has the, that gives Krishna the opportunity to break, to destroy the fear. Bhayahari, one name for Krishna. When he takes away fear. Bhavabha. What is that? Bhavabhayaharam. Who takes away the fear of Hari. One who takes away the fear of birth and death. So, Krishna is not afraid. He never becomes afraid. Only he's afraid that Radharani won't accept me. So that is his fear. He is not afraid of any demons. He's not afraid of whole armies. He'll go out and fight an army by himself and destroy them very quickly. Jarasandha's whole army. And then when he's running away from Kala, the Kala thinks that Kala means the Yavan king. So he's thinking Krishna's afraid of him. Why should Krishna be afraid of him? But he appears to be afraid. He appears to be afraid of Mother Yashoda's stick. That she's going to beat him. But he's not afraid. He's pride, that's another one. How can there be pride in the spiritual world? We see pride in this material world. How can there be pride in the spiritual world? Well, often Krishna appears like that in his pastimes. He may appear very afraid, very proud. Just like he wrote a letter to this Kala. He said that your Kala means black, so you're like a black's. You're like a big frog, so you should know that there's a black snake called Krishna that's going to come and swallow you. So this is given as an instance of pride, Krishna's pride. That's not the pride of a materialist who becomes proud. I'm so great. I'm so wonderful. And then if anyone says anything, if anyone even suggests, even slightly, that there could be something wrong with me, then you become very upset. Oh, how can you think there's anything wrong with me? This is foolish pride, egoism. There's another kind of pride, where one doesn't become upset, whatever anyone says. That's also a manifestation. One kind of pride is if anyone says anything, suggests there's anything wrong with you, you become upset. Another kind of pride is just at the other extreme. Whatever anyone says, you never become upset. Not because you're humble, but because you think you don't care for anyone's opinion. You don't go, I don't care what they say. Who cares what they say? So Krishna, he can have that kind of, he doesn't become upset, but Shishupal, what he says, so many things. Ah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 98, 99, finished. He's not upset. He has that pride. Sometimes Krishna also exhibits the pride that when Prasenna was killed, he took away the Shamantaka jewel and went into the forest and was found killed. And there were rumors in Dwaraka that Krishna had killed him. And Krishna didn't like that his good name would be spoiled, so he took a whole group of senior members of the Yadu-vamsa into the forest to try and find out what's the how actually Prasenna had been killed. Knowing that it wasn't, he knew that it wasn't me who did it. So he didn't like that his good name would be he'd be unnecessarily blasphemed or criticized. So in his Naralila, appearing like a human being, Krishna sometimes appears to exhibit fear. But on the whole, fear is to some extent, fear is healthy. To some extent, so I say, fear God. It's a beginning. It's a beginning of God realization to fear God, that if you don't do what he says, I will smite them ad infinitum. I will smash. If they don't do what I say, I'll smash them unlimitedly. So that's one kind of God realization. But it's not a very high level, because that means that we're thinking that my interest and that of God is something else. Just like this, many times I told this Archbishop of Canterbury, when he was asked what he would do when he goes to heaven, he said, I'll spend the first 100 years praising God and the rest of eternity enjoying myself. It means he has a separate interest from that of God. He doesn't think, the idea that he could possibly serve God for eternity doesn't come up. He said, God is so kind, he's providing facilities for me to enjoy myself, but no idea that we're supposed to serve him for his enjoyment. Therefore, fear arises. Bhayam dvitiya, when there's a sense of two-ness, that I am not Krishna's, that I am separate from Krishna. Bhayam dvitiya bhinivesita syat ishada petasya viparya smritihi. This absorption in fear comes about when we see ourselves as different, as our self-interest as being different from that of service to Krishna. Therefore, our consciousness becomes perverted and turned around. So, excessive fear is not good. Even the mundane psychologists, they have to deal with there's so many irrational fears. They're called phobias. When one has an irrational fear, and there are like dozens and dozens of phobias, which maybe the psychiatrists, they know the terms of these. Fear of water, fear of heights is very common. Fear of open places, when something is very big open space, people can become afraid. And then there's fear of being closed in a room, just the opposite. There are fear of people, fear of animals, all kinds of fear of vehicles. These are different phobias. They all have different names. I don't think I know the names of any of them. Fear of being poisoned, and irrationally. You're always thinking, whenever you're going to eat something, someone might have poisoned it. So excessive fear. You can't trust anyone. Little fear is good. To be afraid of the right thing is good. To be afraid of birth and death, that's the beginning of spiritual life. To be afraid of suffering in this world. To be afraid of displeasing Krishna. In Krishna consciousness, we try to cultivate the fear. At the beginning level of Krishna consciousness, the fear of displeasing or offending the Vaishnavas and spiritual master. So that fear, that can be healthy in spiritual life, but it's the opposite of pure love. Vrindavan love means no fear. No fear that God is going to harm me. No fear that Krishna will do any harm, because there's complete trust. So trust is the basis of love, and trust and fear, they're opposite. So that much there is fear of someone, there cannot be trust, and vice versa. Of course, one trusts God, but then we may also, just like in Dwarka, but there's a sense of great awe and reverence. It's not exactly fear, but similar. But in Vrindavan, they are so free of fear that even they'll chastise Krishna out of a sense of love, because they have such a natural relationship with him. And Krishna prefers, because that chastisement by the gopis is actuated by pure love, not out of enviousness, not out of spite. So Krishna enjoys that more than the prayers given in the Vedas, because those prayers are offered with a sense of distance. But the slanging words of the devotees of Vrindavan demonstrate that although they're apparently, they may be even chastising Krishna, but it shows that it demonstrates their very great closeness to him. So the fear that's being described here, this is a material emotion. It's not apt in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not part of bhakti. But it's what's required in this material world for people who don't have bhakti, or they don't have pure devotional service. It's required so that they can function according to his order. It's a beginning of recognizing his supremacy. But it's a long way from pure devotional service. Is there any question about this? Gauranga, you had some question yesterday? Fear in the spiritual world, that's been discussed here today. Yeah? All right, so we'll finish there.